As I mentioned, we switched things around a little bit. I thought it was really important that we deal with the victory by Zoran Mamdani in the New York mayoral elections today. I happened to hear Benji Shulman talking about this on Chai FM earlier in the week, talking about the probability of a victory. And I thought, let's touch base with him now that he's won. Benji, thank you for making time at the last minute. I really appreciate it.
How's it, Simon? Yeah, great to be here.
So, Benji, I don't necessarily have a list of questions here. I thought I'd just have a conversation with you about the fact that he won. Surely this is no surprise to anybody.
So it wasn't a surprise. There are some interesting aspects, though. So the one is that he didn't win by very much. His lead on his opponent was 10%, which is considerable. But if you're typically a Democratic runner in a mayoral election in New York, you typically hit 60, 70, 80% of the vote share. Mamdani got 50.4%. So that's a very, very kind of slim majority of New Yorkers who actually want him as a mayor, which is very interesting. It's also kind of relevant that if his opponents had actually been able to organize themselves or get over themselves in some respects, they may have been able to beat him, but because the kind of moderate side of the ledger in this particular race was not very well coordinated, they ate into their own votes and then weren't able to create some sort of united front to deal with this candidacy, which I think also says something about particularly where more moderate politics is, both in the Republican and the Democrat side in the United States.
What concerns me to a certain extent is this is so much more than just a mayoral race in New York. This almost seems that it is a new movement. And I'm concerned in terms of how this will spread throughout the Democratic Party in the entire United States of America. Would you agree with me that that's a concern?
It's certainly a risk. The Democratic Party has been looking for ways to deal with Trump ever since he got in, and they haven't really found one. So Mamdani represents one kind of a lane in which they could go. The 50.4% margin, though, is important here, and that's why I brought it up. If you're a Democratic operative anywhere else in the country that isn't New York, you sort of look at that and say, "Ooh, you know, I'm not so sure that that's a kind of number I can reproduce because of the demographics of New York." If you look at some of the other races that happened in New York, in the states yesterday, because it wasn't just New York. You have New Jersey, you have Virginia, and there you had much more kind of standard Democratic people running, and they sort of beat the Republicans fairly handily in most cases. So, Mamdani will become shiny and become an object both for the Republicans and the Democrats to say, "Oh, look, here's our new shiny mayor." But sort of the guys who are crunching the numbers might look at this and say, "Ooh, you know, do we run a campaign like this?"
You know, I couldn't get all the news sources this morning. I was pressed for time. I had CNN on, and it's just so interesting to listen to what you're telling me versus what CNN was presenting. I mean, you listen to CNN, it was a Democratic conquering of the United States today. Gavin Newsom got up and spoke about this is the end of Trump. It was presented as such an absolute victory. You're being far more nuanced and giving me way more insight into what actually happened today.
It is in to the extent that New York is a citadel, right? To run an affordability campaign that he ran with the kind of things that he's promising. I mean, basically the manifesto of this guy is to turn New York City municipal administration into a giant piggy bank, break it, and then spend everything on everything all the time. That's basically his entire thing. And then that's just before the foreign policy. It's not just Israel. He doesn't believe, for example, in sanctions on Maduro, regime and a whole bunch of other stuff. So it is a big deal. Someone like this could probably only have been elected on the back of the 2008 financial crisis, the COVID crisis, the war in Gaza.
But nevertheless, that has happened, and there has been the greatest transfer of wealth from the middle classes up to the super rich. in the history of humanity. I mean, it's trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. So this is what I was saying earlier on the show today, that I understand why average New Yorkers voted for him. $8 a cup of coffee, unaffordable rents. I kind of get it. For me personally, I can't get over the Israel stance. But had I been a struggling New Yorker, his populist message would have resonated.
It's part of the story. It's also a demographic part of the story. If you look at his support base, it's white New Yorkers, right? He does particularly badly in African American boroughs, at least he did in the primary, and in the Jewish boroughs, right? Those are the two demographics that didn't vote for him, at least in the primaries. I haven't had a chance to see if there was a add-on in the general. But what's interesting about the white population in New York is that it used to be made up of ethnic whites, if you can call it that. It was Jews and Greeks and Poles and Italians and whatever. Sure. And now the white makeup of New York is essentially people from outside the city who've come for, you know, the glitz and glam of New York and to do an internship at CNN and whatever. And that demographic, the kind of lefty, waspy groups that are living in New York, somebody called them the downwardly mobile elites, right? People who've sort of made it in life but can't keep the rent up. Those are the people who are voting for him, not the poor.
So the other thing I found pretty fascinating was his acceptance speech this morning. It was not a, I'll be the leader of all of you and we'll put aside our differences and pull together. It was a triumphant, agenda-driven address.
You know, Simon, they say that when a politician tells you who he is the first time, you should believe him. And Mamdani has been telling us who he is right from the get-go. You can say a lot about this guy, and truthful, he isn't. He is saying what he wants to do. He intends to do it.
So this is Chai FM, so let's bring it home now, the Jewish community. I'm going to ask you to imagine what it's like to be Jewish in New York City right now. What does the future hold for Zionist Jews?
Look, I think that the comparison is actually Johannesburg, unfortunately. You have a mayor here, for example, where someone with the kind of outlook of Mamdani goes and built statues in Ramallah of Mandela and tries to name streets after Leila Khaled and all, you know, our lot are not that bright. But here you have the biggest city in the world and someone who is very clearly very smart and quite switched on and has a lot of money. I would expect that the fights that the Jewish community are about to have in New York are going to revolve around all of the programs that New York City has with Israel, including pension funds that are invested in Israeli shares. Before Mamdani got in, he had put together a bill to criminalize donations to Israel of certain kinds. I don't know that he can do that in his current position, but that's the kind of thinking. So we would have to watch and see, are there going to be certain kinds of city-to-city partnerships that suddenly either get cut or not renewed, certain task forces that are part of the New York policing establishment to deal with the tentafadas in the universities and other anti-Semitic issues. I would say that the first line of defense is going to have to be about around those, because if I'm the organized Jewish community in New York, I would not be sitting back and waiting to see what he does next, because as I said, he said what he wants to do.
Fascinating article I saw in the Jerusalem Post this morning talking about should Israel expect greater aliyah from the United States. And the bottom line, they were saying that political uncertainty doesn't drive significant aliyah. Life-threatening situations such as those in the Ukraine do. So don't expect massive aliyah from New York City to Israel. However, there might be some internal migration, i.e. to places like Florida, deemed to be friendlier to the Jewish community. That kind of made some sense to you. Does it make sense to me? Does it make sense to you?
I think it does and it doesn't. Remember, you know, France doesn't face life-threatening situations in their populations. And they, you know, somebody said, you know, you can normally tell the problem of anti-Semitism in Europe by the number of French cakes that are being baked in Dizengoff, right? And given how large the Jewish American community is, particularly in New York, even a small bump in in Aliyah would make a huge difference, like in absolute terms, would be enormous. So, you know, it might not matter in the greatest scheme of things in America, but for Israelis, it could be quite considerable. And you know, I think the other thing about Americans is that they are very mobile, right? They look around. If I'm an American and I've just been kicked out of my flat white Tuesday latte group mm-hmm. because of a genocide, I'm going to look around at this and say, well, maybe I move to Florida, or maybe I go and do an internship in Israel and see what happens. I've seen a lot of that over the last year. So I'm not, you know, in the greatest scheme of things, I think that's probably the correct viewpoint. But because this is the American community, I think that what we will see in the actual numbers might actually be higher than we expect.
Going to be fascinating times. We're in for a rocky ride. Last comment, more than a question, is again in the Times of Israel last week, they were reporting how many Israeli companies are actually present and located in New York City, the kind of investment they have brought and the number of employment opportunities. I mean, it's massive. It's billions of dollars. It's thousands of people. I mean, the man can't be that silly that he's going to go and shut all that down, surely.
Can't is a big word in these contexts, Simon, and maybe it's not so much can't as can't at the first bite. You know, this is the sort of thing where you can squeeze out easy targets very quickly. I don't mean to be alarmist. I think that, you know, we're not going to see the end of New York tomorrow or the next day, but I think that it gives people who have to deal with this kind of stuff a lot more, it makes it a lot more difficult. And you know, people tend to think that New York has always been the shining city on the hill. If you watched movies in the 1980s, you think people should go and do that. Go watch a movie called Escape from New York, right, where the premise of the movie is about New York becomes a giant jail. And it was a joke, right, because everyone understood that this is exactly what New York was. The crime was terrible. The economics were awful. Big cities can go down, and they've had awful mayors before. So, I think that that's a potential real risk in the long term.
And I also think, just a final comment, you know, he spoke a good story, but now he's in power, and that changes everything. Now he has to hold together a coalition of Islamists together with Gays for Palestine. It's not going to be so easy in practice.
Yeah, obviously there's always power dynamics in these sorts of things, but I'm not the kind of person who thinks that politicians who get into power suddenly moderate just because, especially not an as ideological person such as this. Particularly on the Israel issue, I wouldn't assume that that's going to dial down, especially because the only thing that keeps together the LGBT and Zionist and the Muslim Islamist groups are this issue. So he has an incentive, I think, to keep playing it up, because it's not like the Jewish community is voting for him.
Benji Shulman, thank you so much for your insights this afternoon. I found that fascinating.